This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest this time is Ryan Ellis, Director of Tax Policy at Americans for Tax Reform, based here in Washington. ATR has come out with a quick analysis of the president's proposed health care reform plan, showing that there is a lot more taxes in our future, including for those making less than $250,000 a year, which would be contrary to the president's campaign promises of 2008. And Ryan, thanks so much for your time today.
Great to be here.
What kind of a price tag are we looking at?
Well, if you look at the entire tax package, right now the best estimate that we can come up with is that it's a 10-year net tax increase. So even factoring in the tax relief that's in here, it's a 10-year net tax increase of $629 billion. There's one strong caveat to that. It's unclear at this time whether the Medicare tax, which in this plan is expanded to include things like interest and dividends, it's unclear whether that Medicare tax is also going to apply to capital gains. If it does, that'll add about another $250 billion to the price tag.
And that'll get us close to $900 billion, which is a nice transition because that was supposed to be the price tag for this whole thing over 10 years. Now the president, who set that bar, has a plan that's basically around a trillion, yet they still claim it's deficit neutral. What can you tell us about that?
Well, deficit neutral is the wrong metric, first of all. If you raise taxes by $1 trillion and raise spending by $1 trillion, that's deficit neutral, but that's hardly a good outcome. Taxes have gone up and spending has gone up. So whether it's deficit neutral or not isn't really a concern of ours. The concern we have is the government bigger after this is over, and is the government tax more after this is over?
One concern I know that many have had here, Ryan, and this is probably hard to quantify since there's been no specificity in the legislation, is if in fact these individual mandates are put into place and then the government determines what has to be part of that plan, some fear that basically everyone's going to be on a Cadillac plan because the government's going to want to put all the bells and whistles they can on it and therefore tax those plans, which you point out would be about a 40% excise tax, totaling at this point about $125 billion. What can you tell us about that?
Well, I think that's largely accurate. If you look at the rhetoric that the congressional leadership has used and that President Obama has used over the last several years, they always talk about comprehensive quality coverage, which is kind of a soft way of saying a Cadillac plan, a souped-up plan, something that covers everything. So if you have a high deductible because you have a health savings account or you just don't want to pay a high premium, that is not a comprehensive plan in their eyes. I think you're right. People over time would be compelled by law to purchase first dollar, very expensive, bells and whistles kind of coverage. And as you point out, that's exactly the type of coverage that over time will be looped into this Cadillac plan excise tax. So I would think over the next 10 to 20 years, if this plan were to pass, most health insurance plans in America would face the Cadillac plan excise tax.
We're talking with Ryan Ellis of Americans for Tax Reform. And Ryan, as you mentioned a moment ago, even when you factor in all the tax credits here, you're looking at least $629 billion in new taxes over a decade. So this next question only deals with about $1 billion of it, but it could be potentially problematic, and that's doubling the distribution penalty for taking money out early from your health savings account.
Correct. Under current law, a health savings account, like all tax-free accounts like IRAs and 401ks and 529 plans, have an early distribution penalty. So if you take money out of your HSA to buy that proverbial flat-screen TV everyone always uses in these examples, you have to pay taxes on that distribution today. And on top of that, to deter you from doing that, you also have to pay an additional 10% tax penalty for taking it out. That's the same rules as if you take money out of an IRA early, for instance. What this would do is it would increase that early distribution penalty from HSAs from 10 percentage points to 20 percentage points. Now, why is that important? It's not important because I want people to take money out of HSAs for something that's not a medical reason. That's not it at all. But there's finite resources. If a household has $1,000 that they want to commit somewhere, are they going to put it into an IRA where if they need to break open the piggy bank, they only have to pay a 10% penalty? Or are they going to put it in an HSA where if they have to break open the piggy bank, it's going to cost them 20%? Obviously, they're going to put it in the IRA. It's just a way to kick HSAs and HSA owners in the teeth a little bit.
Is this a plan, you think, to kill HSAs? I know that's been a huge controversy over the last 10, 15 years.
Well, there's a concerted effort to kill HSAs. You mentioned before that the government could be requiring people to purchase very comprehensive bells and whistles type health insurance coverage. You could very easily be find yourself in the position 5 to 10 years from now of the government forcing you to buy a plan which is not an HSA-compatible, high-deductible, catastrophic health insurance plan because they simply wouldn't be available anymore. That's one way they want to kill HSAs. Another way they want to kill HSAs is by this early distribution penalty, going from 10 to 20% if you take the money out for something besides a medical purpose. There have been proposals in the very recent past to require prior permission before you can take anything out of your HSA. So if I want to take $100 out of my HSA, right now I can do that, and it's up to me to report that I use that for a valid purpose when it comes to tax time. What that proposal would do is it would make me go to somebody, some consultant or a bank or my insurer, and get prior permission before I could take money out of my HSA. The fact is that congressional Democrats hate health savings accounts, because they want to make sure that people have what is called quality comprehensive coverage. It's pure paternalism, plain and simple.
We're talking again with Ryan Ellis of Americans for Tax Reform. Ryan, another major component here of where this taxation would come, $60 billion on the health insurance companies themselves.
That's right, and this is really nothing more than a flat-out swipe at health insurance companies. It says that if you are a health insurance company and you are making a certain level of profit, you're going to have to pay taxes just because you're a health insurance company. There's no particular public policy purpose for this. There's no rationale other than just trying to punish health insurance companies. And, of course, as we all know, companies don't pay taxes. People do. So this $60 billion that is going to be assessed on health insurance companies, the health insurance companies aren't really going to have much of a choice except to increase all of our premiums in order to pay that $60 billion in taxes. So really what that is indirectly is a surtax on all of our health insurance premiums.
Now, Ryan, you've made it pretty clear that you think this is a pretty bad idea and not good for the consumer at all in a lot of different ways. I know you've run the numbers on the House bill that passed, the Senate bill that passed. Where does this one compare? How does it stack up?
Well, it looks like much of it depends whether this new Medicare tax on unearned income is going to apply to capital gains. If this new Medicare tax on unearned income, which includes interest and dividends and rent and things like that, if it also includes capital gains, which it may, it's not clear at this point, this would be by far the largest tax increase out of the three, either the House bill or the Senate bill. And this is because they want to make the subsidies a little bit more generous, and so they wanted to raise the taxes a little bit more. But even as it is, this is certainly on the same size right now as the House and Senate bills, even without including the capital gains tax.
Can you make the case that this is a step in a bipartisan direction?
Absolutely not. I didn't see anything in here that made me feel warm and fuzzy about it at all. In fact, I would put this bill to be at least as bad as the House and Senate bills. I didn't see any improvements in this whatsoever, and we didn't even talk about the fact that from a non-tax perspective, the worst thing about this bill is that it puts price controls on health insurance premiums. That was not in either the House or the Senate bill. That's a brand new problem, and it's something that makes it, I think, arguably worse than either bill that passed either the House or Senate.
Should make for an interesting summit later in the week and a very fierce debate to follow that. Ryan, thank you very much for your time, as always.
Thank you.
Ryan Ellis is Director of Tax Policy at Americans for Tax Reform. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.